Regrettably, I only have one sibling. My brother Jack, who is 3.5 years younger than me. And we are very different. But people tell me when they meet us both that we have the same speaking voice and many similar mannerisms. He is a philosophy professor, and I am a theologian. So we had some very lively Thanksgiving Day discussions over dinner. Jack was diagnosed with a rare genetic disorder when he was only 6 months old, and this has affected his health for much of his life. Now that his body is aging, he's having more health challenges, and his declining health has impacted his ability to work regularly, and this is greatly diminishing his quality of life because he just loves teaching philosophy. He has good days and bad days. Because he is a philosopher and a believer, he reflects very deeply about his experience of illness, and this causes spiritual pain. He called me during Holy Week this year at a particularly low moment, and he's given me permission to share this because he wants to help others. In the phone call, he said, "I don't know how much longer I can live like this, Rich. I'm being defined by my illness and my disability. I want to believe, but I just don't know where God is in all of this." Well, I wanted to explain it away, give answers for why this was happening to him, but I couldn't. My heart broke. This is my little brother, and he is suffering. The fact that he's in Cleveland and I'm in Seattle made it all the worse. All I could do was listen to him on the telephone, enter this painful space with him, and assure him that he's not alone. But I felt really powerless and helpless to change his situation because I was, and I still am. So I carried Jack's pain and my sense of helplessness with me throughout the days of Holy Week, and it was very powerful. I followed Jesus from his triumphant entry into Jerusalem to the cross on Palm Sunday, and I felt his transformative love on Maundy Thursday. I literally wept when I bowed to, kissed, and then embraced that huge cross on Good Friday. And I tried to leave some of Jack's suffering and my own powerlessness on that cross. I sat with pain and uncertainty outside the tomb on Holy Saturday. And then I felt the joy of the resurrection at the Easter Vigil. The next day, Easter Sunday, I just experienced exceeding joy. But I also had that helplessness, some fear, and some sadness, all at the same time. I had the sense that all of this was gathered up into the resurrection experience. And now, in the Easter season, we are presented with story after story of the resurrected Jesus appearing to his disciples. And what does he do? He shows us his wounds. He is glorified and damaged, exalted and wounded. And in today's gospel, Jesus assures his terrified friends that he isn't a ghost. And he proves this by showing them his wounded body and then by eating a piece of fish with them. To me, what's remarkable about Jesus is that he chooses the most revealing aspect of himself to share first. His hands and his feet and his side are unmistakable signs of his crucifixion, his defeat, his vulnerability. They're not mended and manicured, and I imagine that after 3 days only, the wounds are still raw and gaping. And I think it's theologically significant that Jesus shows us his resurrected body that is wounded and visibly broken. Theologian Nancy Eastland says that the resurrected Jesus bears the marks of profound physical impairment. She's a disability advocate. She goes on to say, in presenting his impaired body to his friends, the resurrected Jesus is revealed as the disabled God. His injuries remain an essential part of his resurrected identity. Wow. I had never thought of it that way. What would it be like for us to imagine or to follow in the footsteps of a damaged and disabled God? What would it be like for us to lead with our scars instead of enslaving ourselves to society's expectations of perfection and prettiness? Jesus proved that he was alive and approachable by risking real engagement, real presence, as in, here is how you can recognize me, people, by my hands and my feet. See, I have scars. I come with baggage. I have history. I am alive to pain, just as you are. I am not immune. I am real. That's a real presence I can get behind. In August of 2006, I left my very affluent parish on the east side of Columbus, Ohio, to enter a residential treatment program for alcoholism. I was miserable. I was frightened, alone, and ashamed. I felt like an abject failure. I was defeated and faithless. My fellows and I were transported around Rochester, Minnesota, in a telltale white 12-passenger van from one AA meeting to another. We did at least one a day, sometimes more. And the meetings often took place in churches, as they do. And one Roman Catholic church had a little gift shop right next door to the hall where our meetings took place. And one day when I was particularly low and defeated, I wandered into that religious goods shop looking for symbols and artifacts that might supplant the faith that I could no longer muster. And a kindly older woman approached me, and she asked if she could help me. I burst into tears. And then she walked over to a jewelry case, rummaged around for a minute, and came back with a crucifix on a silver chain. A tiny Jesus hung on his cross, his face drawn in pain. "Wear this," she said as she pressed it into my hand. Only a suffering God can help. Only a suffering God can help. This line belongs to Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the German Lutheran pastor who was executed by the Nazis for resisting their reign of terror. Supposedly, a prison guard found a piece of paper with the line scribbled on it, and he smuggled it out of Bonhoeffer's cell just shortly before his death. Only a suffering God can help. This broken, suffering God helped me. The paradox of the resurrection is that Jesus' scarred body comforted his disciples. His wounded hands and his feet pulled them out of their disbelief and fear and into a radical, life-altering faith. We dare not treat this lightly because it testifies to an even greater mystery. As theologian James Allison puts it, Jesus didn't simply erase death in the resurrection. He carried death's shell on his living body, rendering his scars as a trophy, a sign of life's ultimate and lasting victory. What type of life is it, Allison asks in awe, that is capable not of canceling death out, which would be to stay on the same level as it, but to include it, making a trophy of it, allowing it to be something that can be shown to others in order to allay their fears? If even at the apex of his resurrection victory, Jesus' witness was a witness of scars, then maybe we should take heed. Maybe when the world looks at us to see if we are real, to see if the Jesus we love and the faith we profess is truly approachable and trustworthy, they need to see our scars rather than our perfection. They need to see our vulnerability, not our triumphalism. Wounds are not pretty, my friends, and no, they don't tell the whole story of the Christian journey. But the stories they too do tell, and the broken, and neither should we. Wounded, disabled, scarred. This is our God. This is resurrection. This is the Word made flesh. May we be witnesses of these things.